Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings podcast, where our guest today is Andrew Thake, the Divisional Director of Minds and Money, Resourcing Tomorrow and London Connect. So these are all events that are organised for mining companies, really investors and key industry players to meet and go round and learn about all the different projects of exploration and commodities around the world, and you know, ideally to make connections and help people better understand their investing proposition that the companies are offering, and hopefully have some success in picking the right companies. So thank you very much for joining us today. Andrew, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great. It's we've got a few events coming up, so it's hectic, but it's all good fun, Mark.
Indeed. Well, we'll talk about your events in a bit. I know you have quite a few coming up, so we'll get on to them. But I think, first of all, what I'd like to do is just get a little bit of an insight into your background, really, where you've come from. You can go back as far as you like, where you were born, or you can start at university. But really, I'd just like to get a bit of an insight into where you started out in life, your early career, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so I graduated a long, long time ago from St. Andrews University in Scotland, did a degree in modern history and management studies. And I started out life as a chartered accountant with KPMG. But I discovered after a couple of years that chartered accountancy and myself didn't really sort of match. And, you know, I wasn't very good at chartered accountancy. Okay. So I left after a couple of years. And to us, I wasn't too sure what to do. And then I happened to see an advertisement in the Times to be a conference producer, sent in my CV, not really knowing what a conference producer did, and ended up producing telecoms events for a number of years. And I guess over the last 20, 25 years, I've worked for a number of conference companies before eventually drifting into producing mining events.
Okay, so you worked for conference companies. Obviously, did you feel you found what you were looking for in life?
Yeah, I mean, I think that sometimes is, you know, there are some of my, you know, university and school colleagues who always knew that they wanted to be a lawyer, always knew that they wanted to be a teacher. To be quite honest, when I was at school and when I was at university, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. But what I like about being an events organizer, and especially within the mining industry, is you get to speak to lots of very, very fascinating people. And in our particular industry is, you know, mining is just such a critical job as to how the world is developing at the moment and really kind of for the future of the world and how we go and grow.
Indeed. I mean, I think talking to people is extremely important in any kind of specialism that you're in. You know, to surround yourself with peers and like-minded people really can help to your personal growth and the growth of the sector in general. I mean, you mentioned there a little bit about the mining sector. Let's just talk about your interest in that, because it's always an interesting story, I think, how people fell into investing in mining. I am a miner personally. My investing journey started probably just a little over 10 years ago, and I've quite quickly found myself investing or drawn to mining companies. I'm not entirely sure why. I think maybe the idea of treasure hunting, or you know, the kind of excitement of a discovery, and also the very global presence of these companies. You know, they're in far flung places, in the middle of nowhere, in some instances, where a lot of interesting kit has got to be used to get onto site and get the stuff out. So I think that's possibly why I like the mining sector. But I mean, what sort of background do you have in the financial markets in general, in terms of investing and then moving into mining?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a casual investor. So I look at Motley Fool. I've always sort of like owned sort of stocks and shares, I guess, since my sort of like mid-30s. Both investing in funds and also investing in individual stocks. I think, to be honest, my drifting into mining was sort of more by accident. that I'd actually been at the time I was headhunted and asked to join the mining company that I currently work for. I was producing oil and gas training courses. So I was already slightly moving into the natural resources sector. So I could have drifted it more by accident rather than design. But I think as soon as I got into it, it's just, I think the industry is just extremely interesting because it just adds obvious value to what we do. You know, I had produced other events in other sectors, such as I produced events in defense, I produced events in electronic financial trading, and they could have been kind of interesting, but it comes back to the people within the mining industry. I think you mentioned something there about their discovery spirit, their kind of pioneering, their entrepreneurial attitudes. So that definitely appeals to me. I think the fact that they really are creating something of value and something of long-term value. Mm-hmm. And I think as well that the industry, I know this is a bit of a sort of a trite phrase, they're just a bunch of very nice people. I can think of other industries and other sectors that I've worked in, and I thought, of course, I don't really enjoy talking to these people. But gosh, I have about 500 conversations with either miners or investors, you know, during the course of a year at least. And nearly every single conversation is a good conversation.
Okay, interesting. So you mentioned there that you fell into the industry through actually what, coming up with training courses for the oil and gas industry?
Well, yeah, I was doing training courses for the oil and gas industry. I was kind of like enjoying that. And then and then my current sort of CEO is based in Hong Kong, went and offered me a job to join the team up in Hong Kong, because at the time we were organizing a Hong Kong mining conference there. And I was based in Singapore at the time, and I thought, you know what, this move sounds really interesting. You know, I read up and learned a bit more about the mining industry. And I moved to Hong Kong in 2014 with the company Beacon Events. And, you know, as soon as I got stuck into picking up the phone, talking to miners, going along to events, I absolutely loved it from first sight.
Okay, excellent. Interesting. So you've been investing, you said, since your early 30s. So I don't know how old you are, but I presume you are older than me anyway. I'm 34. Have you sort of seen, do you get a feel for the sector? And it's a very cyclical sector, the mining sector. Have you sort of experienced that? Do you get a feel for that cyclical nature of the mining industry?
Yes, I do, because when I joined in sort of 2014 and then into 2015, we were really at the sort of like bottom. And then you've seen obviously the last sort of like 4 or 5 years been certainly better than that sort of downturn period we had in 2013, 2014. So I had a sort of a sense that we've been in sort of like a better period than we were when I first joined the company back in 2014. Sometimes it is possible to pick out sort of particular sort of like trends. You know, obviously, like, you know, the rise of interest in like lithium a few years ago, the current interest we've now got in critical metals. Sometimes these trends come up and go and sort of like surprise you. But the good thing is, because, you know, I'm quite close, you know, to the industry in terms of the amount of people that I talk to, I'd like to think that I'm able to sort of like stay ahead of the trends and really have an idea sometimes as to what I think is going to happen, and then hopefully build it into the conference programs so it's of interest and of value to the people that attend.
Yes, indeed. That's very important. I mean, from my perspective, I think I started in about 2013, I would say. Around that time, I started investing, and a particular CEO that I interview, who's in the mining sector, I interview him quite a lot. He often talks about the super cycle, you know, the fact that it's really, really overdue. But he's been doing that for quite a while. he will be right, and
eventually.
I do feel it though more now than ever personally. And I think that that's because it is overdue. We know the sector has been in a low for a very long time. We've seen the last sort of decade's been really about tech stocks and those kind of unicorns, yeah, growth stocks. And they look like they are perhaps topping out, I think, a little bit. But I think the big thing is given the green shift, the green economy shift, which the world is probably going to go down pretty, pretty strongly. You mentioned there the critical metals, you know, the metals that are used in the green economy, lithium, for example, cobalt, nickel, rare earths. I mean, who would have thought a few years ago that word, those three words would be, rare earth elements would be on the lips of your everyday person. But, you know, they're being spoken now by people very high up in the EU Commission. We're hearing them quite a lot. They're going to be very common in the years to come. So I really feel the next shift is going to be driven very much by these commodities in this space, which will bring a lot of interest back into the mining sector. I almost think that the sexiness of crypto and all the people that came out of the woodwork from crypto, the experts and all the hype of crypto, might actually find its way to the mining sector, and we'll have people getting as excited about Bitcoin and the latest meme coin as they do about gold and rare earths. It'll be quite a journey to be part of. And have you, doing these events then over the years, you've done a number of these events for the mining industry. What feel are you getting from key industry players here about how the world is shifting? You said, mentioned there about wanting to be ahead of the curve. So how are you feeling?
Yeah, so I think, and also this is partly in response to some of those points you just raised there, is that, you know, somebody said to me earlier on today is that you can choose to be a vegetarian and you can choose not to eat meat, but you can't choose to live in a world without mining. And I think that the world is increasingly realizing that if we believe in decarbonisation, if we believe in net zero, and we believe that this is the way we want to go, then critical minerals and mining are an absolute key part of that. And then once that realisation kicks in amongst the wider general public, then there'll be a greater recognition of mining, of mining, a greater recognition of mining companies, and investors will come back into mining. And linking that into your question, it might have been the case that for the last half a dozen or so years, is that investors have been into other sectors. It could be crypto, it could be cannabis if they're in Canada. But I think that now, if I was an investor, I'd say that the greatest opportunity is now back within the mining sector, because you can't go and do decarbonisation and net zero and everything else which is involved in that transition, in that energy transition, without mining. So I think it's a tremendously interesting time. And speaking to your point on rare earth metals, I mean, it was really good that, I was switching on the BBC News about 3 weeks ago, and, you know, the third news item was about the discovery of rare earths in Kiruna, Sweden. It's great that it's getting a bit more attention now, and that can only be a positive thing as far as the mining industry is concerned.
Absolutely. I saw that news article on the BBC News website, actually, and thought, yes, fantastic. We're getting mainstream media talking about rare earth elements. It's very exciting. I did a podcast not so long ago with a commodities investor. He's a hedge fund manager. He's very big on data. He modeled all the mines and he has everything in front of him. He has all the numbers and figures at his fingertips, and he'd done some workings out, and he said if we're going to go down this green shift, we need to create the investment of 6 United States of Americas, and we have to do that within the next 30 years, and most of it will happen within the next 10. Incredible, really. He surprised me with that, and I said, well, that's good for us in this space. And he said, I think it'll be one of the greatest times to be alive.
Yeah, it sort of like will be. I mean, And it's kind of interesting as to, you know, which metals that one needs to back in order to sort of get there. Will it be rare earths? Will it be lithium? You know, will it be nickel, or will it be like something else? I think the other interesting aspect as well is to, especially when it comes to electric vehicles, is, you know, are there other alternatives out there to lithium ion batteries? I was talking to a former professor at Harvard the other day, and said, well, you know, you need to think about it. It's like, you know, lithium ion has been, ion batteries have been the main batteries you've been using for the last 40 or so years since Sony bought them in, I think it was the 1980s or 1990s. But what happens if a new battery comes in? How does that change the market? How does that change the metals that we actually need? So it's a really fascinating time, but then trying to select as to which commodities and within that, which mining companies will be the winners, you know, that still requires a heck of a lot of skill.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Research is very important. I mean, can I ask you what perhaps you're looking at specifically? I don't know if you want to sort of share any investments you have, any specific companies, if you're happy to do that.
So I would like to say, I mean, in terms of, I guess, when I first joined Mines and Money back in 2014, I had a bit more time. So I was going more into investing into individual mining stocks. And to be honest, a lot of it was if I came across somebody as part of my research and I thought this person's really good and very impressive, and I read a bit about the company, I then invested and bought shares. So good examples of that would be in companies like Mark Bristow, and obviously it was then Randgold before the reverse takeover and becoming Barrick. Bought shares in Franco Nevada because that was a great company as well. Where I found I became a bit more unstuck was when I tried to invest into junior exploration companies. Mm-hmm. And I think here I think it's Rick Rule's maxim. And for those listeners who haven't heard of Rick Rule, definitely go and sort of like, track him down, Google him down. He's one of the world's top exploration investors. His rule is if you're going to own a mining company, you need to make sure you're prepared to spend at least 1 hour a month sort of like updating yourself, checking on the latest news, making sure that you still think it's a good investment. And I think that when it came to junior mining exploration companies, I'd often be very good at buying them and then not so good at then selling them at the right moment, because I'd buy them and I think I'd leave them for a few months and then I'd go and forget to go and sell them. And I think that, so there were some classic examples there that I got into Northern Dynasty at a really good time. And if I tracked and monitored it better than I did, it wouldn't just have been a 10 bagger, it would have been like a 20 bagger. But instead, because I was, you know, I probably sold it a few months too late, it still kind of like went up sort of like threefold. So I shouldn't really sort of like complain. But there was a lot of examples there, Mark, of probably just junior companies where, because I wasn't putting in the time and effort, the sort of like returns, I was making a lot of sort of my timing was wrong, and I was making a lot of sort of like bad or mediocre investments. So I now tend to be, you know, in 2023, a much more, I would say, boring, risk-free investor. So I tend to invest into ETFs. So some of the VanEck gold ETFs is why I tend to put a lot of my mining investments sort of these days, just because it just takes away a bit of the thought out of it, because obviously, you know, VanEck then sort of like do all the investments and like rebalance the portfolio periodically. And you probably know that if you invested into sort of like a VanEck portfolio, it's probably going to be a safer way as sort of like getting a reasonably good returns within the mining industry as sort of like other alternatives, unless you're really prepared to go and spend, you know, 15, 20, 25 hours a month, you know. And I say to anyone like listening in, if you've got the time, then buying individual mining stocks is a really great way to go. But if you're like me and you've only got a few hours a week, is going down a strategy of investing into ETFs or maybe sort of royalty and streaming companies, which sort of gives you a spread of risk, maybe that's like a better way of investing your money.
Indeed, I think that's good advice, because it does require a lot of time to do the research, and we know how volatile the juniors can be. Whereas you invest in an ETF or, as you say, royalty companies, they're not as popular in the London markets. They're very popular in North America, but that's also a very good way to get exposure to the upside of mining. But you're letting someone else take on the due diligence, let's say, to actually take part in that investment. The key things for me really are that it's obviously got to be good value. You know, the market cap's got to be good value. Look at the projects and what stage that project's at, also what jurisdiction it's in. Good management that are engaging with shareholders, that have skin in the game, And of course, you've got to time that with the sector as well, and with what is sort of hot at the moment. And if all those sort of things align and you like the look of the story, then it's worth a go. But you're very right in terms of actually, you know, keeping an eye on it and selling when you're happy with your profit, and sort of never looking back, because a number of times I've held on to a stock, made a decent bit of money, and then it's all disappeared because I've held on to that position thinking that more was coming. And it could have come eventually, I don't know, but certainly in the short term it didn't.
Yeah, and I also discovered that the other bad thing I was good at setting, but I was bad at following, is I might put in stop losses and say, okay, if the share, you know, falls down by 10% after being at the top, I'll then go and sell it. But I was then very bad at, when the stop loss was hit, was then following the stop loss that I'd gone and set. So, you know, I think that was the other thing as well. I think to be an investor, you know, investing into single stocks, you've just got to be very, very disciplined. You've got to have a strategy and then say, I'm going to go and follow through with it, Mark. Mm. But I was just like not like disciplined, you know, as some other people are. So doing ETFs, doing royalty and streaming companies was just like a better way forward. And I think even for, say, something like Franco Nevada, I think that if you bought shares, gosh, you know, 7 years ago, I think they've probably doubled in value over the 7 years. So, you know, I think most of us would be very happy with any investments that we've made that sort of doubled in value every like 7 years or so.
Yeah, indeed. Well, we talked there about sort of meeting people and getting to know the people in the business and doing your research. And I think a big part of that, certainly for me, is going to different events. That's really what transformed my investing journey, actually going and meeting people, not necessarily listening to a presentation from the company, but being able to actually talk to the CEO, the other people in the business, really get your questions answered, look into their eyes. But moreover, the other people that were there, the fellow investors, people who just like you were there to try and pick the right investments to ultimately better their lives, to improve their income. So going to events such as Minds and Money or Resourcing Tomorrow, for example, I think are very important. And of course, you've got a number of events coming up, and I think this is the first time you're going to be going to Miami. This is the first this Miami event that is in a few weeks' time, is your very first one. So, what was the ambition behind going to Miami?
Yeah, so we wanted to do an event in North America. We had done events in North America a number of years ago, before COVID-19, in both Toronto and in New York. But looking at the situation in 2023, we could see that there was no mining event taking place in Miami. And there was a real appetite to organize a junior mining exploration event there once we picked up the phone and started talking to junior miners. I think there's a couple of things to point out, is that Miami's always been known as being the Wall Street of the South. So it's always had a very strong investment community. It's also, the investment community isn't just institutional. It's also a strong retirement community there, full of lots of high net worth investors looking to go and invest. But it's become stronger in that since COVID, you've found that a number of people have relocated, let's say from New York or some of the other northern US states. They've relocated to Florida. And then they've liked the sunshine and they've decided not to come back. And if you look at the stats as to internal immigration inside the US, you'll see there's been an inflow of people to Florida and an inflow of investment companies into Florida over the last 3 years. So that gives us a really strong like investor base. Mm. We organize it just before an event run by the Bank of Montreal. And that definitely works because there's a number of institutional investors who go into the Bank of Montreal event who will then stop off at our event first in order to go and meet the junior companies that are attending our event. Because the Bank of Montreal event is a great event, but it's mainly for majors, mid-tiers and producing companies, while the 80 mining companies attending ours are more the exploration, the earlier sort of stage. So it's a very, very different sort of like event. So it's working really well. We hit our target of 80 mining companies signed up last week and, you know, very, very sort of excited 3 weeks out.
Okay, so you've had 80 mining companies sign up. Can you give us an idea of where they're from? Are they mostly North America, or are they from all over the world?
They are pretty widespread. I mean, in terms of geographical location, I guess the country, the most common country is US-based projects. But then, you know, I guess that's a fairly obvious answer. But in terms of where they're listed, obviously TSX listed as popular, but we've got a lot of Airslix listed companies flying in,
okay,
because a lot of them are using us as part of their road trip. So 10 days after our event is the PDAC, Prospective Developers Convention up in Toronto. So they'll come to our event first, and then they'll fly up to Toronto afterwards, and maybe do some sort of marketing at various US cities in between. So we've got a geographical widespread of companies. I think in terms of commodity focus, because of your earlier points about critical metals, we're seeing more of those mining companies that you might term as critical metals this year than maybe sort of previous years, you know, lithium, nickel, but also copper as well, and also graphite. But you're also still seeing a lot of gold and gold and precious metals companies that are attending as well.
Okay, excellent. And if people want to go to the event, is it as simple as getting a ticket? Is it free for people to turn up to?
It's for, if you're an investor, the tickets are free, and you can go to our website and apply as an investor.
Okay.
The only requirement we ask for an investor is that if you do attend, is that you go and do meetings with some of the wonderful 80 mining companies that are on show there. So I think the majority of your listeners are sort of investors, and you know, please come to our website and sort of sign up. If you're a mining company, you're on the other side of the coin, and you'll need to sort of like pay to attend. But in return, you get to meet these wonderful investors that will hopefully want to go and give you their money. And we do get deals done at Mines and Money. One of the reasons why events have grown year after year is we keep on getting more investors along, who make investments into mining companies, and then the number of mining companies coming back year on year grows.
So the events that you organise, they're more than just a conference with booths that people walk around and talk to the CEO. You're actively encouraging meetings. There are places where people can go. You can use the meeting planner to book a meeting with the company or the CEO, and there are places where you can actually go and have a one-to-one.
Yeah, yes, because I think that my role at Mines and Money is primarily is to oversee the content of the events. So we do have a program which has panel discussions, just, you know, where do you think the price of gold is going? You know, what's going to happen in the critical metals space in 2023? And we also have a series of mining spotlights, which are, Mark, essentially 10-minute updates where the mining company tells you a bit about their project, you know, their CEO, their background, history of the mining company, why you should go and invest. And that content is really good. It helps set the scene. And if you haven't heard of, you know, ABC Mining Company before, you can listen to the CEO give you his pitch about ABC Mining. But the great thing about then having the meeting planner is you can then have your own private one-to-one meeting with these CEOs. And the key thing I just say to people listening in, it doesn't matter if you're not an institutional investor, even if you're a high net worth investor, you know, who mainly invests sort of $10,000 a time or that into a mining company, these CEOs would still really want to go and meet you. You know, the kind of like when the CEOs come to our event, they like to come to our event with a packed schedule, and they like doing meetings with institutional investors, high net worth investors, but even sort of like smaller like retail investors that have like less money to go and spend. Because for them, the more investors they get to meet, it's just like a virtuous circle for them.
I completely agree with that. I think there's an illusion that there's a barrier to entry here. We almost put the stock market and people involved in that on a bit of a pedestal. But you know, that was certainly how I felt when I started in this journey. And you think, oh no, event's not for me. I can't call up the CEO or the chairman. I'm not in his game. But you're right. The majority of people there would love to talk to people, retail investors, just as they would to talk to institutions as well. So it's nothing to be scared of, you know, just turn up, I think have a wander around, look at the companies that are going, pick a few that you want to talk to, and why not arrange a little bit of a meeting, you know, get to know and spread your network in that space.
Yeah, and I think it's also the case that retail investors ask questions that institutional investors don't ask.
Yeah.
You know, institutional investors will ask the questions you expect them to ask, you know, tell them about the track record of your management, tell me, what your like cash flow is, you know, can you talk us through stuff? And because I've got some of the questions about your like balance sheet that I've like looked at. But retail investors might ask very different questions, but the questions they might ask are no less important. So, you know, let's just take uranium, for example. You know, I personally think, Mark, that uranium and nuclear power is a very, very safe energy. But I can tell you there's a lot of retail investors that I've met who still, when you say the word uranium to them, they still think about sort of like Fukushima or sort of like Chernobyl, and wouldn't go and touch a uranium company with a barge pole, even though the situation with regards to safety has vastly changed over the last 40 years. So it's interesting for, you know, mining CEOs to meet those people who've got those questions, you know, and to go and educate them. And mining CEOs are amazingly open with their time. That never ceases to amaze me, that they're really open to talking to investors. Doesn't matter as to how big or how small you are, they really want to go and talk to you.
Yes, this is very true. This is very true. Of course, Miami is a little bit far away from Europe and the UK, but of course you do have the events in London. I wonder if we just finish off, give us an idea of some of the themes of the upcoming events. That is, of course, London Connect, which I think is in April, and then you've got Resourcing Tomorrow, your big event towards the end of the year.
Yeah, so the London Connect event in April, which is taking place at County Hall, that would be an event really which is mining investment focused. So we'll have 80 mining companies attending. There'll be about 300 plus or so investors that we're looking to sign up and to go and attend. And we'll have a lot of like topics, you know, discussed, you know, essentially like mining investment themes, you know, where you think the price of gold is heading this year, you know, what are the opportunities within the lithium space, you know, questions, you know, panel discussions talking about copper, et cetera. And there'll also be the meeting planner at the event as well. And that will be the second year that we've run the event. With the Resourcing Tomorrow event on the 28th to 30th of November, we really try to take a big picture view of the entire industry. So we do look at mining investment, but we also really look at the future of mining. We look at, you know, the big picture issues of decarbonisation and the energy transition. We look at ESG and sustainability and how that's impacting the mining industry. We look at governmental policy as well. We also look at technology as well, because technology is really impacting the mining industry as well, you know, in terms of areas such as processing and areas such as recycling. So when you attend that event, there's a lot more content and a lot more tracks and theatres of content going on. But there is also still the meeting planner, and there's the booths and the ability to do one-to-one meetings. So we would encourage, you know, people to sort of, obviously sort of sign up for both. But both events, you know, we've got details on our website, and we'd obviously love your listeners to go and investigate more and sign up for them.
Indeed. Well, I would also encourage any listeners to have a look at that. That's, of course, Mines and Money. You can just Google Mines and Money and the website comes up there immediately, and you can see the upcoming events. And I can speak from personally going to Mines and Money. Well, I should say, sorry, Resourcing Tomorrow in November at the end of last year. And I've been to a few events in this space, and I must say this was one of the best ones that I went to. The vibe there was incredible. It really felt very serious. You could feel the business in the air. It was a very, very, very good event to go to. So I would I'd second anyone who's thinking to go. It's definitely worth it if you can make it. But for now, thank you very much, Andrew Thake, for joining us on the podcast today and talking to us about the events that you organise.
Well, thank you for your time, Mark, and thank you very much for Stockbox's support, and look forward to seeing you at future events.
Indeed, look forward to it as well, Andrew. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.